Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during November. To begin, don't forget that we Americans switch back to standard time on the 6th. Why we keep yanking the clock around each year, you know, spring ahead, fall back, has less to do with energy savings and more to do with congressional, meddling. Anyway, let's talk about something interesting involving this month's full moon, which occurs on the 14th at 8:52 a.m. Eastern Time. It's the full beaver moon, so-called because Native Americans noticed that these critters became, well, busy as beavers as winter approached. If you look at the full moon that night, will you see anything special about it? Geometrically, there is something noteworthy. On the 14th, about 6 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 hours before full moon, the centers of the Earth and Moon will be just 221,524 miles apart. Of course, we're not at the center of the Earth, so as you gaze on that big bright ball, it's actually about 4,000 miles closer. Now, it turns out that the Moon hasn't been this close to Earth since 1976, and won't be this close again until 2020. The underlying reason is that the Moon's orbit isn't a perfect circle. It's a little elliptical, or oval-shaped. So, at this month's perigee, or close point, the Moon will be about 7% closer to us than average, and its disk about 15% bigger in area. Is that enough to notice? Probably not. I can't tell, and it's my job to look at the Moon often. But you'll hear a lot of news reports about this so-called supermoon. I'm not a fan of that catchphrase, but I just wanted you to have the facts. Okay, let's take stock of the evening sky. Darkness comes sooner now that we're back on standard time. The bad news is that daylight is likely over by the time you get home from work, but the good news for us stargazers is that we can grab a quick look at the evening stars before supper time. The moon's phases are almost exactly in sync with the calendar right now, so after sunset in early November, you can watch the moon grow from a hair-thin crescent over in the west to half-lit on the 7th to full on the 14th. By the way, have you ever wondered why we call that half-lit phase first quarter? It has nothing to do with how the moon looks. First quarter means that the moon has completed one quarter of its orbit since the last new moon. That same reasoning applies to last quarter 2 weeks later. The planet Venus is rising higher in the west after sunset, and it's stunningly bright. You can't miss it. Try to get outside early in the month and look just to the right of Venus to spot Saturn. This won't be the case later on, because Saturn is quickly dropping deeper into the twilight and out of sight. Now look well to the upper left of Venus, about three times the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length, and there you'll find the planet Mars. It outshines all the stars around it, though it's not nearly as bright as it was this past summer. Right now the red planet is on the far side of the sun from us, and late last month it reached perihelion. That means it's moving fastest along its orbit. So Mars is sliding eastward compared to the stars around it, which themselves are dropping quickly into the western twilight, much like Saturn is doing. But Mars should continue to set about 4 hours after the sun for the next couple of months. Now let's get our celestial bearings as darkness falls. Look high up in the west and you'll see our old friends, the three bright stars of the summer triangle. Vega, at lower right, is the brightest. Deneb is above it by the width of two or three fists, and Altair is farther off to Vega's left, and the one closest to Venus and Mars. I suppose summer triangle is something of a misnomer, because you'll be able to see this striking trio well into next month. Now turn to your left, past Mars, to face south. The only decently bright star in that part of the sky is Fomahot. Depending on your latitude, it's above the horizon by two or three fists. This lonely beacon is sometimes called the Autumn Star. It's part of the dim constellation known as Piscis Austrinus, the southern fish. Around mid-November, look for Fomahot at 7 p.m. and note what's below it along your horizon. That direction is due south. So, since Fomahot is toward south, if you do an about-face to look due north, you'll find Polaris, the North Star, roughly halfway up from the horizon to overhead. Don't expect to be dazzled by Polaris. It's only half as bright as Fomahot. About three fists to the upper right of Polaris, you'll see a group of five medium-bright stars crudely shaped like a three, or like a broad W tipped up on its left corner. This is the constellation Cassiopeia, who is a queen in Greek mythology. You might imagine those stars outlining the chair or throne that she's sitting on rather than the queen herself. The somewhat dimmer stars of Cepheus, her husband, are to the queen's left. They look a bit like an upside-down house. Ancient poets say that Cassiopeia was queen of either Ethiopia or Joppa, the city now called Jaffa in Israel. In any case, she was both beautiful and boastful. To punish the queen's arrogance, Poseidon, lord of the sea, unleashed a flood and sent the monster Cetus to ravage her land. The only way to stop the sea monster was to chain the royal couple's daughter, Andromeda, to a rock as a kind of offering. Luckily, the hero Perseus was on his way home from having killed Medusa. He swoops in to save Andromeda, then claims her in marriage. Meanwhile, Queen Cassiopeia's misdeeds landed her up in the sky, doomed to hang upside down half the time and clinging to her throne so she doesn't fall off. All these mythological players are in the same part of the sky. For example, you can find the splash of medium bright stars marking Perseus by starting at the three of Cassiopeia and looking down two or three fists. To the queen's right, by about two fists, is Andromeda. Go a little farther to the right and closer to overhead to spot the great square of the constellation Pegasus, the winged horse. In some tellings of Andromeda's rescue, Perseus is riding on Pegasus. The dim stars of Cetus, the sea monster, are three or four fists below the great square. November is also the peak of two weak meteor showers. Early in the month, keep an eye out for a few torrid meteors. These can sometimes create fireballs, but are otherwise not a big deal. Then we'll get to see the Leonid meteor shower, so called because the streaks of these shooting stars appear to radiate from the constellation Leo. Normally, it's a pretty modest display, with only 20 or so visible per hour under the best of conditions. But for this year's peak, before dawn on the 17th, light from a waning gibbous moon will wipe out the faintest ones. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Until next month, I wish you clear skies.